Did you know that Game Pass or Pass is brought to you for free because of Spotify for Podcasters? It's a totally free platform, and you can make a podcast today for free. Spotify for Podcasters lets you record and edit podcasts right from your phone or computer. So no matter what your setup is like, you can start creating today. Then you can distribute your podcast to Spotify and everywhere else that podcasts are heard. And if you think about taking your podcast to the next level with a video podcast, Spotify can help you too. With Spotify for Podcasters, you can also earn money in a variety of ways that includes ads and podcast subscriptions. So what are you waiting for? Download the Spotify for Podcasters app or go to spotify.com/podcasts to get started right now.
Hey there, Game Pass or Pass listeners. This is Ben.
And this is Alex.
And we have a podcast called That Gaming Podcast, where we share opinions about the PlayStation and Nintendo games we're playing right now.
That's right. Just like Corey and Basher here, we get right to the point on what we thought about the games. And we keep it honest.
So find us on your favorite podcast player. And now enjoy this episode of Game Pass or Pass.
Now time for a very little black bird edition of Game Pass or Pass, the podcast where we play games on Microsoft's Game Pass service, tell you which games to pass on to your friends and which games to grab that umbrella and start beating the crap out of scarabs. Were they scarabs?
There were some scarabs in there. There's like some dung beetles, I think.
I lost my train of thought. We play Game Pass games and we tell you which ones suck and which ones don't. That's what we do. I'm Corey. I am joined by the man that probably didn't use the umbrella, Basher.
I mean, I just never used umbrellas, really. It was anti-umbrella in general.
I'm not an umbrella person either.
Umbrella is for the weak.
It's cumbersome. It's very wide usually. So like you have to like picture that your head is like 18 times its size. You have to be kind of like cognizant of everyone else around you. I'm just not a fan of the umbrella. Just
especially
give me a hood.
Like if you're like a driver and stuff, like you have to like, it's just finagling the umbrella to get inside, outside the vehicle, then inside, outside. Then like it's just a lot of work. Just get wet, guys. It's fine.
But it seems like a very outdated invention. We need to reinvent the umbrella is what I'm saying. That is what we need to do. Like genuinely, I think this should happen. And why do they always break? No matter what you do.
I think the problem is we don't. I think after this episode, we should invest in a great umbrella, like a good $300-$400 umbrella, just to see if there's a difference.
You heard it here first. We will be on Shark Tank next year, 2023, and we will partner with Mark Cuban on the great brella. Don't steal our idea. This is not what we're here to talk about.
Sorry. No one's stealing our idea.
We are here to talk about Death's Door. But before that, did you know that Spotify, you might have heard about it, they do podcasts now. You might have heard about that too.
But Joe,
they
have Rogan's officially, on it.
Who? They officially have rolled out podcast ratings. Took them long enough. So you can now go on Spotify, and as long as you are a listener, you can now give us a rating. So why not do that? Why not give us the best rating? I just hit my mic like six times. The best rating and the most honest rating. We got some new feedback on iTunes. We got two more reviews. Always appreciated. I would totally read them because I wanted to, but they are not coming up on my iPad. So we'll read those later. Let's talk about Death's Door. This is developed by Acid Nerve, who's known for Titan Souls along with Death's Door. This is a two-man team. Did not know that. Two-man team did Titan Souls as well as this game. Regularly priced at $19.99. Is an isometric hack and slash available on Xbox One, Xbox Series X and S, Nintendo Switch, and PlayStation 4 and 5. There are cloud saves. There's no crossplay, and as of right now, there is no DLC. Death's Door. Let's talk about it.
Death Door. This is one you were looking forward to, if I remember correctly.
It was. I don't know if it was one I was looking forward to. It was one that I had an inkling. I was like, I think Death's Door is going to come to Game Pass because it was. It was a temporary. It was like a 6-month exclusive, I think, on Xbox, and then eventually Switch and PlayStation got it. And I kept hearing about it, and I wanted to play it, but it was one of those things where everything else just kept coming out. And then I was like, you know what? I did the Game Pass thing of just like, I'm going to wait a little bit longer. I'm going to wait just a little bit longer. Also, like, stealth, is that going to be the new thing? It's like whenever Xbox has like a 6-month exclusive of one of these indie games, they're just going to, like, if it doesn't launch into Game Pass, they're just going to wait until it's available everywhere. And they're like, oh, by the way, it's on Game Pass now. Like, that's actually kind of brilliant in some ways, but also kind of a jerk move.
A definite jerk move, because I feel like Bill Gates and company know what we were doing here with this podcast, and you just really, I mean, me especially as the
can you imagine if Bill Gates listened to this? Like, what if Bill Gates wrote to us? That would be, I think my life would be complete at that point. I don't even like Bill Gates.
I mean, I'm about to say, I would feel very whatever about it.
But like, at that point, it's just like, you can go up to someone like, yeah, Bill Gates emailed me. Who else can say that? All right. Anyways, Death's Door. Yeah. So I was looking forward to it. I kept hearing about it. I kept hearing positive things. And so when this came, it was like, you know what? I really want to hop into that because I've heard it's a very, very good game. So that's what prompted this one to kind of move up the ladder pretty quick.
I mean, we are now in an age where of gaming where it's not even a Souls-like anymore. It's a what's that genre? It just flew out of my freaking mind. That's crazy.
Roguelike, or
yeah, like exactly. So like you have the roguelikes in a roguelites.
Correct.
We're at that point with the Souls-like games. Like
yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah.
And there's just a lot of these now coming out, and I mean they all got their little twist on it. So like with Death's Door, you play a little blackbird, right? And I believe he's a Shinigami of some sorts. It's sure. His first day on the job, so he it's his job to go around collecting souls and whatnot. Aesthetically pleasing. I'm a fan of the overall look and design. It's grayscale, the entire thing, I want to say, right? Mostly, when you're in the Shinigami world, then it.
Yeah. The sort of overworld, I guess you want to call it, is grayscale, and it represents sort of like the in between. It's not Limbo, but like something along those lines.
I mean, Bleach Flames. Know what I'm talking about. So like it's basically that. It's Soul Society, just in black and white.
Right. So yeah, and he's I think the official title is he's a Reaper.
Right. If I remember. Exactly.
And his goal is to collect souls in the afterlife. I don't know if they ever explain why he was given this task, but I believe that's the task.
Exactly. So one thing I do like about this game and these games in general is they don't take too long at all to get started. Like, as soon as you go around pressing A and talking to people, like, you're on to your first hack and slash area. And it's neat. It's cute. It's the combat's not mind-blowing. And you don't expect it to be. But at the same time, I was kind of looking for something in a combat that would make this title stand out a lot more. I just didn't get any, because again, you there's a lot of these games out now, so you expect them to put that cool, neat little twist on it. And what I gathered by playing this game is their cool twist on the Souls light, like, whatever you want to call it, is what if you are playing an animal instead of a person?
yeah, I don't I think we just expected different things from it. Like I didn't expect like a deep hack and slash. I expected a almost Zelda-like game. You know, Zelda's combat is not exactly deep. It's very like you get other weapons and you've got projectiles. Like in this case, you've got magic and you've also got like a bow and arrow. Each one kind of does its own thing. You can even get a hook shot at one point kind of thing. I really just expected a Zelda clone in a lot of ways. And it does have some Souls-like elements, but it's really sort of just breaks down to the upgrade tree and sort of the upgrade path, as well as what happens when you die. So I guess I don't disagree. Like if that's what you were looking for, then yeah, this is not it, but that's not really what I came to it for.
Fair enough. I mean, I think it's somewhere in between both those sort of genres, because it does not shy away from death and repeat gameplay at all. So,
and it's not shy about kicking your butt at times too. Like it throws you into new situations very quickly, and a lot of times it doesn't care basically. Like there is no, like you said, it sort of just throws you in the world. There's very little tutorial, and it's just like go do whatever you want kind of thing. It's not like an open world, but it kind of is, but there are hard gates that will stop you if you don't have a certain item, et cetera. Like you can go to the entrance of a different tomb or you know, a tower or whatever, but it will not let you through, if that makes sense.
Right. So there's some exploration there, which is cool, but overall, it's pretty get it off. It's pretty linear experience. It's not a long experience either, which is oftentimes a positive in a lot of these smaller titles. I guess I just was hoping for the game to kick into a second gear. The majority of this game doesn't take to the next level. You know, like the bosses aren't very creative. Like, and that's what you kind of come here for, because it's like you said, it's more Zelda-like at times than Souls-like. However, there is no intricate dungeons or anything, so there's no real exploration that makes you want to go and check out every nook and cranny of the map or whatnot. So when you're left with just the combat, you kind of needed something, or I needed something that would take that combat to the next level, whether that be some sort of gameplay tweak or just really creative bosses. And I don't think I got that.
I'm trying to think how to answer this without spoiling anything. I guess mild spoilers. What I think is unique about Death's Door, because you're not wrong. However, I think what you're looking for is here, but it's not presented in a way that is easy to find. There is a ton, and I mean a ton, of hidden stuff in Death's Door that you can walk by and never even know it's there. Like there's secret endings, there's items, there's weapons and stuff that you can miss. Like there is a lot to find in the game, but it's not presented in a way that you would kind of think. You know, it's usually kind of easy in these type of games to be like, oh, like there's a secret here. And sometimes there is, like, you know, it's like the cracked wall kind of thing. Like there's some of that stuff. But I think the other problem with it is that you really can't access a lot of that stuff until the end of the game. Like the game is, like you said, it's linear and it sort of presents you on this path. But then after that, it sort of splits into like, okay, you can now go to the end, or you can go back to the areas that you've been and find new things. And that's kind of like Zelda, but I feel like this is more, there's more to it than Zelda in terms of like, usually when Zelda's like, hey, you can go back and get more health and get more bombs now. And you can do that in this, but there are hidden items and hidden weapons and hidden story beats and all that stuff here. But it is not presented in a way. What I'll say is I didn't go back and get it. I went back and got a couple of them, and I was just like, you know what? I'm kind of ready for this to be over. Like, I'm not upset with it or anything, but I'm enjoying the story. I'm enjoying the locations a lot. I'm enjoying how vastly different that the locations are. It's basically broken down into three areas plus the main area, and each one is very, very different. So I was kind of ready for it to be over. So again, like, I feel like everything is here that you wanted, but it's just not presented in a way that's easy to digest.
Perhaps. I mean, because I got the same feeling as you did, and for the same reasons. I don't think, at one point I was ready for the game to end, but not in a way where I felt like the game was just not good enough. It really came from me, just the lack of, you know, like by the end of these games, you want to feel a bit more powerful. Like, you want to feel like a sense of you've come a long way, and I just didn't get that from this game. I feel like Death's Door is, as well as it does the stuff that it does well, I just didn't get a great sense of progression and then a reason to progress. The story-wise, it's absolutely fine. No major complaints, if you will. But at the same time, it wasn't driving me to finish. Therefore, I was relying on the action and the combat and exploration. And like you said, it's there. And much like Zelda in this criticism, the newest Zelda, Breath of the Wild, you can go over there, but what's really over there? Is it worth your time? And I just never really found that to be the case. So especially when, as you said before, the game's not that difficult, if at all. It'll kick your butt at points, but for the most part, it's really not that difficult. So you don't really feel the need to go back and get that super weapon, because it's, I mean, you can pretty much handle most of the things on your own.
Yeah. I guess I just don't. I don't disagree, which maybe I do. Like, the part that sort of sticks out in my brain is that I think that the exploration and the new areas hit a lot harder for me. Like, when I first started the game, I think I had a very similar, I don't want to say attitude, but whatever, you know, just sort of expectation of like, I've heard this game is like got deep combat and all that. And like, it has a skill tree, but it's really not a skill tree. Like, it's more like a buff tree.
It's six, it's six or seven rows that you go left to right in.
That's four, I think, actually.
Oh, man.
But I could, because it's like, you do more damage, more speed, more magic, and more resilience, maybe. And so, like, I'm like you, I was just like, man, like this isn't clicking the way I wanted it to. And then but once I had sort of got out of the first area and went to the second area, like, that's what sort of pulled me along. And at one point you said the bosses weren't unique. I think the bosses are unique, but I don't think they're strong. Particularly the,
fair enough,
the,
yeah,
yeah, the third boss with the it's like a yeti or a whale or something like that. It's the cold area. I did not like that boss one bit. Like, I thought it was a very bad boss. I will say the last boss I super enjoyed. So I think for me, it's not a home run, but it is one of the more unique, just like, it reminds me a lot like the first Ori. Like, the first Ori does a lot of things right. And I think people can latch on to one thing that they super enjoy. And you know, for a lot of people, it's the art style, and the art style of this game, like, it doesn't, in my opinion, doesn't look as good as Ori, but it's got a very distinct art style, and it looks unique. And Ori's combat in the first game, you know, it was there. It wasn't amazing, but a lot of people latched onto the combat in terms of the exploration, like using it to explore. And I think that has this going on. But what I will say is, like, I don't feel as strongly as I did about it that first Ori. And I don't quite know why. Maybe it is the bosses. Maybe it's the music. You know, I like the music for the most part. I didn't love it. So
it has some nice background tunes, but it never really kicks into gear like a like like
right
like Ori will have that
when the moments get crazy, you feel it.
Exactly. Like, yeah. Right.
Right. So I like it though. Like there's something about it that's unique, and it might just be the fact that I haven't played something like this in a while. Like, because you are right. Like we get a lot of indie games like this, but there's something about this one that just feels different. I don't know if it's the polish. I don't know if it, like, it runs fantastic. It looks really nice. Like it's got that isometric view, and the art style doesn't really clash with anything. Like it's, everything fits. And by the end of it, you know, when you're hookshotting around and all that stuff, I feel like it could have used like one more area, kind of similar to like a Ganon's Castle or something. It's like, you're going to use everything that you've learned here.
Right. And exactly. Yeah.
Like it's kind of there, but it's not, it's missing something, but it wasn't anything that took the experience, you know, from a 10 out of 10 to a 5 out of 10 for me.
Exactly. You know, like, yeah.
So, yeah.
I completely agree with you. It's like, my criticisms of Death's Door isn't to say that the game is, my criticisms come from a place of, I wanted to enjoy it more, not that I had a bad time with it. Because this is it looks great, it feels great. It's just not enough meat on those bones for me. Like, it's just a little, like, it's something there that it needed a unique thing for me to take it over the top of, yeah, that's all right, that's fine, that's fun enough. You know, like, it just didn't kick into that next gear for me. And I guess that's my biggest thing, is I liked it, but I wanted to like it more.
Sure. Yeah. And that's fair. I'm trying to rack my brain and figure out like why that didn't bother me as much. Cause you're not wrong. Like the game never really, like, eventually you get like a bomb and you get like, enemies become a little bit tougher simply because they've got like a shield, and it does stuff like that to where it's not just the same throughout the whole game. There's new enemies and new areas. Like, it's from place to place, everything fits. Like, the castle has its own sort of like laser puzzles and stuff. And it's got its own puzzles. It's got its own exploration. But you're not wrong. Like, it never does take it to the next level. And I'm not really sure why it doesn't bother me. I don't know. I guess I can't answer that. It just doesn't bother me.
I don't mean to bash the game, but I don't like, and I hope I'm not coming off that way. Cause again, overall, the game is just fine for me. But one thing that did genuinely annoy me for no real reason, I don't think, is the health system. Like, you have to find seeds to bring to a pot, and it grows a flower, and then you come to the flower to get health. And I just felt like something about that just felt unnecessary. Like I felt like the game was trying to be too cute for its own good at that point. Like, just let me pop a health thing and call it a day. Like, I don't, for a reason that bugged me, actually bugged me. For the most part, everything else was fine.
It bugged me too, for the simple fact that it might tell you, and I just missed it, that I didn't understand that it respawns. Like, I thought I was just going to plant that. Like, it makes sense because it's a plant, right? Like, I'm a moron. But, like, I planted it, and I took the thing, and I was just like, so that's it? Like, but when you think about it also, it's because there are basically dungeons in this game, and there's a lot of the plant, the pots in there that you plant into, and that makes sense. But then it's like, I'm never coming back in here. So,
that's
like,
right.
And yeah, and the currency, but at the same time, if you're doing even the most basic exploration, they give you a ton of them, of the seeds. And so I kind of had this weird, like, RPG thing where it's like, I'm afraid to use this thing.
Exactly.
And there's no reward for not using it. It doesn't have the Shovel Knight thing of like, hey, if you keep going, like, you'll get more rewards. That would have been maybe something to kind of implement in there, because really what you should be doing is basically almost using it every time you see it. And I still never broke that cycle by the end of the game. I had like 15 or 20 that I was just holding on to. But no, I mean, no, like, that's, that's those kind of things that maybe in testing it would have been different. You know, and it's a small team, you know, that's not an excuse. I'm just saying that it's, they implemented it. That's the choice that they went with. And I don't think it's bad. I just think it's not as clear of its intentions. Like, I don't actually understand what the point of it is. Like, other than maybe the whole idea of like restoring, I won't say balance, but restoring things to this world. It's like, oh, this is part of that. Like, you're restoring things. And sure, that's like a somewhat weak narrative hook, but I don't really see the gameplay benefit of it.
Yeah, I mean, that was the only thing that super bugged me. Other than that, I mean, it's fine, you know. Like, I just it's a great first step to something. I think that might be better in a sequel, but I think it is worth pointing out that this is a two person team, so it does matter in a way where you don't give it excuses, but you do give it praises, in my opinion,
right,
for the things that it does right. And it does so many things well here that you can only give it praises for that. So, yeah, the Death's Door, just, I wanted more. I guess my biggest thing is I wanted more Death's Door. I wanted that ending to really kind of going to this new place or something, but like, you're really doing, you're not really bringing all your skills together by the end, which I think is a bit unfortunate.
Yeah. I think my comparison to the first Ori is pretty strong for me. While I still think the first Ori stuck with me more, and it might just be the theme. It might've been because it was 2D. I'm not exactly sure. Like, it reminds me a lot of that game in that they have a lot of good ideas, but for whatever, you know, time constraints, you know, video games are hard to make, whatever. It's not a 10 out of 10. Like, it does what it does well, but it doesn't knock it out of the park. Like, the second Ori is legitimately, in my opinion, one of the best video games ever made. It is that good on every level, from soundtrack, gameplay. I think this is a solid start. And if they made a Death's Door 2, I'll be there day one. And so, but when it comes to this show of Game Pass or Pass, I would pass on it. I would say, or pass it on. Sorry.
Oh, I would pass. Say, that was a plot twist.
I would pass it on for the simple fact that I think the biggest thing for me is that it doesn't overstay its welcome. It does what it does strong, and it's not a 50-hour game. It's not a 30-hour game. Like, even with, if you do everything and you're not using a guide and stuff, I could see you getting 15 to 20 hours out of it, because there really is a ton of hidden stuff in. It's kind of crazy, actually, like some of the hidden stuff. But if you're just playing it organically, it's like a solid 6 to 8 hour experience. And I think that's the perfect length for it.
I'm right there with you, actually. It's the things that it does well, it does well. It's not going to blow you away, but you're going to get some good fun out of it. I don't want to keep repeating myself, but again, like, my criticisms come from a place of, shoot, I wanted more of this, just at a higher level somewhere in the gameplay. And I do think a Death's Door 2 would be absolutely phenomenal if they just built on what they have here. So definitely pass it on to a friend.
Yeah, for sure. Check it out. It's even if you're on Switch or whatever, it's only $20. It's well worth $20. So, but all right, we're actually going to be moving on to a listener question, and we got a text message, and let's see here if I can pull it up. You can also email us or text us. Let me try that again. You can write in just like this caller did, and you can leave us a voicemail or shoot us a text message, 574-651-9256. Discuss virtue signaling by gaming companies. That's a very big topic, disclosed in a very short sentence.
And we're going to fix it right now. It's that easy,
guys.
Gonna
fix it. Yep. I'm going to let you start for the simple fact of this is a very big topic. I'm trying to think how to word this. Am I wrong or am I bad to say that this would affect you more than me?
You're not wrong. It's racist.
Well, here goes this show's done.
No. So I don't know if I mentioned this during the Meet Your Podcasters episode that we did, but I am the resident black podcaster here.
I am not, for the record.
All right, so now we know who's who and where we stand. I am of the mindset that I prefer the best product, and not even just gaming. I prefer the best product produced the best way, no matter what. And if you can represent people by doing that, that's just, while doing that, that is just an immense plus. So I never shy away from it, cringe from it, or immediately turn away from it. However, I do recognize when it's blatantly obvious that you put a black guy in there because you think I'd buy it, or you made a Spanish character or a Latin character rather, and he or she is cartoonishly Latin. In a sense of virtue signaling and gaming, it depends on how you look at it. If you look at it from a standpoint of representation is necessary, then I agree. We need more virtue signaling in gaming. We need more people of color. We need more women. We need more people represented, period. If you go back, if you're a somewhat older gamer, and you go back to the aux or the early 2000s, whatever, every single game you played was a white guy with a scruffy voice as a protagonist, like pretty much every single game you played. I remember there was a meme, someone made a picture of all the box art of the biggest blockbusters of that year. I think it was the BioShock Infinite year, actually. And it was just a bunch of white guys with their back to the cover holding a gun some cool way. And it never, I can honestly say that it never bothered me growing up not seeing people that look like me in games. However, you do notice it, and it does become a parody of itself at some point. So the fact that the industry changed to incorporate more people, I completely support it. So if you're looking at virtue signaling in the other way, where you think something like making a black history flag for Halo is problematic or distasteful in some way, then you're paying too much attention to the wrong things. It's not that serious in that case. In the situations of just simply celebrating people's and their achievements by giving out free, I believe it was free in Halo's case, by giving out free...
I certainly hope so.
Right? By giving out free cosmetics, then if you have a problem with that, there's a problem with you. Like, it's not that serious. It's fine. But then you have what I think is the third way to look at this. And you actually sent me this, Corey. Did you get that from NeoGAF or?
No, that was Reset Era.
What is it?
Reset Era.
Oh, okay. Yes, it was someone criticizing the Horizon. What's the name of the new Horizon game?
Forbidden West.
Yes.
We know what you won't be playing tomorrow.
I don't care. And I mean, like, I don't care because it's the PlayStation that only has three games on it.
Shots fired.
I'm just going to read this for Ashley. I'm going to read it as this person wrote it. It's by Neozon, I believe. You spell that? Nexon? Spotlighting Black Excellence. This person is the diversity analyst member. And it goes, as someone who noticed those issues with the first game, Horizon Zero Dawn, I can definitely see them here as well. At this point, they're sadly unavoidable with this franchise without a change in protagonists, as I still feel like a lot of these issues could have been somewhat alleviated if they had not made Aloy a white woman. That's the wrong type of virtue signaling. It doesn't address anything thematically or artistically about the game. It doesn't even address the gameplay of the game. This person simply has an issue with Aloy being a white woman. That isn't constructive at all to the landscape of gaming. And if anything, is separating people more. There are times when virtue signaling is necessary and it's prideful and it should be done more often. However, there are times where you got to pull it back. And I think the lines of those two perspectives have become extremely blurred with people. Well, people on the internet anyway. And that's my two cents.
You said a lot, and I don't mean that in a bad way. It's hard to sort of play off of that for that simple fact that you said a lot. But the reason I say that is because, like, I don't want to say I don't care, because that's not true. Like, if I'm like, I just don't care, whatever it is, what it is. But like that is sort of that's how I approach it when it comes to the gaming sphere. It's just like we've sort of hit this moment in time, whatever you want to call it, of it's hot right now, right? Like, and it's kind of a topic like the third person or the third avenue that you talked about with the person from Reset Era. Like, they're talking about it, and I almost and you sort of brought this to life, like, it almost seems like a parody, like, of taking it just too far. Like, it doesn't make any sense. I don't even understand what that person's really saying. Like, granted, we read it out of context, but I did read the full thing. And I don't even, like, I genuinely don't understand the line of thinking to get to the point of saying that the problem is Aloy is white. Like, I don't understand it. And if you ask questions, that makes you the bad person. So that's been sort of my take on it for somebody. It's just like, you know what? Like, I have genuinely tried to talk to people about it, which is something I think more people should do, is we just need to talk about things and not go on the internet and go on a forum and just blast everything. But the problem is no one wants to do that. So when something happens like Halo Infinite honors Black History Month with an emblem and a nameplate, like, it's fine. It's not aimed towards me, and that's totally fine. It doesn't affect me. It's not like when Call of Duty put up, you know, they delayed a whole update when things were happening in the world, and then it, you know, put a big thing on the screen of just like, we can do better. Like, that was a little weird and aggressive. Like, it didn't stop me from playing Call of Duty, but I thought it was kind of strange that that's the avenue that they were taking. But at the same time, like, it's their choice. They can do what they want to do. I don't let it bother me for the simple fact of there's so much time or so little time you have in a day. You and I have conversations. Like, my outlet of that is talking to friends and acquaintances about the world around us and that's going on. And that's how I address it. When it comes to video games, I don't let it bother me for the simple fact of just that I just want to play video games and experience them and move on from them. I don't need any more of that in my games. If it's very obvious, like you said, and it's beating me over the head with it, I'll maybe call it out, but I can't think of any time where I've been beaten over the head with it where it actively took my enjoyment away from it. I'm sure there's stuff out there that does that. I haven't experienced it. And yeah, so I feel like I'm rambling at this point, but my main takeaway is I agree with you in that, you know, Avenue number 3 is too much and it always will be. But as long as it's done in a way that is tasteful and makes sense, I don't really care. Like, and I've never really experienced the third way. I've never looked at a product in the gaming industry and come to the conclusion that it was done distastefully and it affected my enjoyment.
I can think of an instance when she was real big, about a dozen years ago at this point, Femme Frequency, I believe she went by on YouTube. She really, she made, I believe Feminist Frequency, I believe her name was, or her
handle.
Her handle, right. She came off to me as a grifter anyway. I never really took her seriously, but I remember a lot of people. That's not true. It's not a lot of people. Just a few very loud people on the internet speaking about boycotting one of the Far Cry games because they were putting her in it as a character. And she was flown to Ubisoft headquarters and did a tour and all this good stuff. And it really got on people's nerves. And I just thought, a series as stale as Far Cry, as redundant as Far Cry, what it takes for you to tell Ubisoft to do better in terms of making a better game is some lady who you don't like in to be put in the game. Like, you're not going, like, this is my biggest issue with people who worry about virtual signaling for the wrong reasons. You're quick to purchase the next next Halo or Battlefield or Cyberpunk or any other of the dozens and dozens and dozens, if not hundreds at this point, of broken games. Games that are stale, games staler than Madden, FIFA, NBA. You're buying all of these games. You're supporting all of these developers, all of these companies, rather, who don't do anything to grow gaming in a way that's artistic and creative. Yet, you're so worried about and willing to go to bat against them when they virtue signal. That's the wrong message that we're sending us. That's the wrong lesson that we're learning. I'm going to parrot what you said. I've never had an issue with virtual signaling in a game in general. Even if it beats me over the head like a Last of Us 2, I can honestly say I didn't like that game for every other reason.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, Last of Us 2, it didn't... That is the most recent example, and, like, to me, I had already forgotten about some of that stuff, because Ellie was lesbian, right? And people were upset about that, or what am I
misremembering? That, and it had the transsexual in there, too.
It did. Oh, that's right, the younger, okay. Now it's all come back. I remember that being like a big thing, and you know, Neil Druckmann gets called a couple names and all that stuff. And it's just like, I'm with you, and it's just like that. What was funny is that a friend of mine who hasn't had a PlayStation since the PS2. You know, he got Xbox and never looked back, and even he heard about that at one point. Like, you know, he because he knew I had, you know, he knows what I play, and he knows I play all the big stuff for the most part. And he's like, so I heard about that new Last of Us 2, and it's super woke. And I was just like, no, that's not really true. Like, I never got that feeling from it of it being woke. And that, and I remember like the talk going into that game was it's so woke. But as soon as that game was out for a week, nobody was talking about that anymore. Everybody was talking about everything else that sucks about that game. Like, I don't, and I say that to be a little, you know, flippant of just like, I know a lot of people like that game. I did not like that game at all. The story of that game, the gameplay is fine. But I just think it's crazy that, like you said, a lot of the times, like, there was such a big deal made about that stuff, but it turned out to not, again, it's not that it's not true. It's just, it's, it wasn't portrayed in the way that people thought it was going to be. And instead, what actually was the problem came to light, which is actually good in some ways, but, you know, it is what it is. Yeah, I stand by that, like, I have never noticed, it has never bothered me. If it bothers somebody else, that they have that right to express their opinion about it, and that's their opinion and that's their right. But I have never not purchased something or felt like I was beaten over the head with these tropes, I guess. Trope's not the right word, but you know what I mean.
No, absolutely. So, I mean, so like, if I guess if I was to sum up my overall thoughts on it, is retro signaling and media in general, it should be celebrated. It should be something that's necessary. We should see more people. We should see a more diverse group of protagonists and antagonists in these games. And it shouldn't be an issue when you do see them. And instead of being challenged by just the fact that they're there, we should challenge instead how they're used, and if it actually creates a better gameplay experience or not. If they're just there to be the token person of color, then it's like, what's, you're making the experience worse anyway. And I understand that, but like, if you're, so that's what we need to really kind of challenge when it comes to this landscape, like, using a more diverse group of people in a way that elevates the product.
Yep. I agree with that entirely. Hopefully I said that, you know, again, this is a very big topic, but I agree with what you said right there at the end. Like, that, I think that's the perfect way to wrap it up, at least my opinion on it. So maybe that's why we have this podcast. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. You can email us, gpopfans@gmail.com. You can shoot us a voicemail or text message, 574-651-9256. When it comes to the future and what games we're going to be playing or have played, we're going to be talking about, I have already lost it, we're going to be talking about Telling Lies. That's a game. That is, we're not going to be telling lies to each other. And we're going to be talking about Dreamscaper. Those are the two games that we have on the docket. We might have a third one. We still have not entirely committed to it, I guess you could say. But all right, that's going to do it for this episode of Game Pass or Pass. We'll see you next time with either Telling Lies or Dreamscaper.
Good day, sirs.